Oh, this is a very hard stone step to be set on. And a cold one, too. But it is at least a place to be sat. And full of wonders as London is, I do not much relish the prospect of tramping its streets till nightfall. So I will sit here, opposite this fine piece of statuary. Ah, William Pitt. Indeed. And he looks every bit as vexed with matters as I am. Oh, if it all somehow could have been avoided. I do not blame John Bold. In seeking to reform the hospital, he acted, I'm sure, out of the purest and truest of motives. It would have been best, I suppose, if I had never taken on the wardenship in the first place. If I'd never got the lovely house, the £800 a year. But it never occurred to me that what I was doing was wrong.
The Warden by Anthony Trollope. Dramatised for radio by Martin Wade. With Alec McCowan as Harding, Juliet Aubrey as Eleanor, Douglas Hodge as John Bold, Stephen Moore as Dr. Grantley, and Janet Moore as Mary Bold. Episode 2.
Mr. Bold, I want you to abandon this proceeding against my father. Mr. Bold, I implore you, do not destroy a man who has loved you so well. Spare him. Spare his life. Spare his reason. For either his life or reason will pay the forfeit, believe me, if this goes on.
Oh, Miss Harding, there is...
Mr. Bold!
I...
Surely, dearest brother, you cannot refuse her.
I would give her my soul, Mary, if it would serve her.
No, Mr. Bold, do not speak so. I ask nothing for myself. And what I ask for my father, it cannot harm you to grant.
John?
I say it again, sister. I would give her my soul.
No, no, Mr. Bold.
Everything I have is hers, if she will accept it. My house, my heart, everything. Every hope I have is fixed on her. And when I see her in sorrow, as I do now, every nerve in my body suffers.
Mr. Bold.
No man could love her better than I do.
No, please. There must be no talk of love between us. Simply tell me, if you will, whether you intend to protect my father from the evil you have brought on him. Whether you will allow him to live out his days in peace.
I will do anything for you. Oh, Ellen, let me tell you how much I love you.
No, no, you shall not tell me. That is very wrong of you. Tell me instead that father is safe from harm. Promise me that he is. I will not leave you till you do. I'll cling to you in the street, kneel down and entreat you before the public gaze. Promise me, Mr. Bold. Promise me that he is safe.
You must speak to her, John, and you must accede to her request. You are not a cruel man.
No, indeed. Nor would you be false to me. If you give me your word, I know you will keep it. Give me your word, Mr. Bold, and I will let you go. Mr. Bold...
Well, then, I give you my word.
John!
All that I can do for your father, I will.
Then may God Almighty bless you forever and ever.
They've already writ about you once, Your Reverence.
Yes, Bunce. But once, it seems, was not enough. I've not read the piece yet, Bunce. I confess I've been putting off the dreadful hour. Such cowardice, eh? Well, here we are. We also feel it is our duty in this regard to return to the question of the Barchester Almshouse, which we have already had cause to place before our readers' attention. We do this because, in response to a petition signed by the old men of the almshouse...
Not all of them, not all of them.
No, Bunce.
They couldn't make me sign it.
No, Bunce. I'm very grateful I am to you for your support and comradeship. And in defence of an action which was taken on their behalf...
No, not on my behalf.
...by a gentleman acting solely on public grounds...
They mean Mr. Bold, do they?
Yes, Bunce. In defence, we say, of the action which has been brought against the warden of the almshouse, Mr. Septimus Hart. A plea has been set up by the leaders of the church in Barchester. This plea, supporting the warden's practice of taking for himself 3/5 of the charity's annual revenue, is one we know will be particularly revolting to the minds of true English churchmen. Oh dear, Bunce. Oh dear. It argues that what Mr. Septimus Harding receives as his stipend as a servant of the almshouse, and that he is not himself responsible for calculating the amount that he receives.
Well, isn't that true?
Such a line of defense might be used with respect to a bricklayer employed on an almshouse building or a woman who cleans it, but we feel that we do not much care for a clergyman of the Church of England... for a clergyman of the Church of England who could allow such an argument to be put into his mouth.
Is that the end of the piece, Your Reverence?
No. There's more yet. But I fear, Bunce, that it has already become as bad as I imagined it might be, and even worse. I've read enough.
Of course, I cannot guarantee that the legal action will cease. There may be others who will wish to take it up, though I doubt it. All I can say, Miss Harding, is that the lawyers in the case have received their instruction directly from me, and indeed their monies. I will advise them at the first available opportunity that I wish the case to be dropped.
What about the Jupiter?
Well, the Jupiter, yes, well, that will not be so easy, I fear. Despite what some folk in Barchester have said, I have not written any of the newspaper copy myself, or directly requested that it be written. I was never in a position to do that.
But you do know Tom Towers, do you not, John? And it was Tom Towers who wrote that leading article.
I do know him, yes. And I believe he did indeed write the piece. I believe, too, that there is another leader in today's edition.
Oh, no.
I haven't seen it myself.
Is it not possible for you to ensure that nothing further will be written?
No, Miss Harding, it is not. But I will call upon Tom Towers when I am in London, and I will attempt to persuade him. At the very least, I hope that I could prevail upon him, if he writes again about the affair, to desist from any personal allusions to your father.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Bald. And now, really, I must go.
So soon, Miss Harding.
I must hurry back and tell Papa the good news. I'm greatly obliged to you, Mr. Bald. Papa will be so very touched by your kindness.
May I not, before you go, say one word to you on my own behalf?
Mr. Bald.
I shall fetch your bonnet, sister dear.
No, Mary, don't go. I'll fetch it myself.
It's quite all right. It's quite all right, Eleanor.
Miss Harding.
Yes, Mr. Bold.
Miss Harding, Eleanor, I love you.
No, Mr. Bold. No, no.
Allow me to speak.
No.
I love you, Eleanor, more than I have loved anyone in this world.
No.
I love you more than anyone has loved you.
No, no.
I love you more than anyone ever could love you.
No.
I love you, Eleanor. I love you. I want you for myself. Provided, of course, that your father is agreeable to the notion, and that you have no aversion to it, and that there is no one else, no other preference. Might I ask you if there is anyone else?
There is no one else. Mr. Bull.
Of course, I dare not hope that you are able to reciprocate my love. That is, love me as much as I love you, sweetest, dearest Helena. But I must ask you, nonetheless, will you be my wife?
Eleanor.
I have some news for you, Papa.
Yes, and I have some for you.
Oh. Well, then, for I am determined to outdo you, Papa, I have 2 pieces of news. But you first.
I am going to London.
London?
Yes, my dear. I intend to settle matters one way or another. I am afraid, Eleanor, that there are some things which cannot be endured, which must not be endured.
Papa, what has happened? Well, I had such good news about the hospital. Do not tell me now that I am too late.
What is your good news, Eleanor?
The lawsuit is over.
Ah.
I have just come from speaking with Mr. Bold, and he assures me that it will be abandoned. There is no further cause for misery on that score, Papa. The whole business is closed.
I see.
Well, is that not good news, Papa?
Well, if Mr. Bold thinks he has been wrong, if he thinks he has done wrong, then of course he must do now what he believes is best. But whatever he does, he cannot make me change my mind.
Oh, Papa, I thought he would have been so happy. I thought everything would...
Mr. Bold may have given up this particular enterprise, my dear, but I fear that there are other men he has engaged upon it who are beyond his control. See, on my desk, today's Jupiter.
The Jupiter.
When you have read the article there, you will understand why it is I cannot change my mind. I no longer wish to be warden of Hiram's Hospital. It is not worth the price.
Oh, Papa.
Mr. Bold has seen fit to drop the case, but he cannot unwrite what has been written about me. He cannot arrange it that the Jupiter's article won't be read by every clergyman in Oxford. Nay, by every gentleman in the land. He can't do that. Any more than he can dispute the truth of every word that's written in that piece. He can't dispute it, and nor can I. You see, I have no right to be warden of the hospital, Eleanor.
No right, Papa?
I have no right to £800 a year, no right to this house, no right to spend in luxury what was intended for charity. So I trust that Mr. Bold has not abandoned the case for my sake. For my sake, he should certainly not do that.
No, Papa.
Here is the Jupiter, my dear. The article is marked in red ink, should you wish to read it.
Yes, Papa.
Oh, but you said there were two items of news you had to tell me. What was the other, my dear?
The other? Yes. I will tell you it, Papa. But not now.
When Pantagruel was born, there was no man more amazed or confused than his own father, Gargantua. For when he saw, on the one hand, his newly born son, and on the other, his wife, newly dead in childbirth, he was gravely torn as to whether he should be delighted at the arrival of the one, or should mourn the departure of the other. One moment. One moment. Come.
Dr. Grantly.
Ah, Mr. Bold. Good afternoon. How are you? Thriving, I trust? How can I help you?
Well,
very happy, I assure you, to do anything I can for such a dear friend of my father-in-law.
Thank you. I hope you'll excuse my calling and so suddenly...
Of course, with no apology is necessary from Mr. Bold.
This is, I take it, a convenient moment.
Not entirely, to be truthful, since I have a sermon to complete and a pile of ecclesiastical business to be gone over, but no matter, no matter, pray, speak.
Dr. Grantly, I intend to terminate the legal proceedings which I commenced in connection with Hiram's Hospital.
Oh, I see. You intend to do that, do you? You intend to abandon your attack upon Mr. Harding.
Grantly, there has been no attack, I assure you.
Well, we won't quarrel about words. I should call it an attack when a fellow attempts to take away from another every shilling he has to live on, but it shan't be an attack if you don't like the word. That game you've started, then, you've had enough of it. Can't say I'm surprised. Not much of a game, is it, when you happen to be losing and you have everything to pay and you have nothing to gain in the first place?
Forgive me, Dr. Grantly, but you misinterpret both my reason for commencing the proceedings and the cause of my desiring to put a stop to them.
Oh.
But never mind that. I came to tell you of the decision I have taken, not of my motives. And as I have done that, and as you are a busy man, I wish you good day.
One moment, Mr. Bold. One moment. This conversation should perhaps have been left to our lawyers, but in view of the fact that you have given me your information, you will be good enough to hear my response.
Very well. I'm in no hurry.
The situation, Mr. Bold, is this. You have
humbugged a number of old fools at the hospital and tricked them into believing there are vast sums that are theirs for the taking. You have somewhat ostentatiously declared that it is your duty as a man of high public virtue to protect these old fools. You have exposed a very worthy gentleman who once counted you as a friend to all the ignominy and insolence which the press can heap upon him. And now, now you find it's more than it's worth, this game of yours. You think you'll finish with it. Very prudent. Or at least it would have been, Mr. Bold, had you thought of doing it earlier. But has it occurred to you, I wonder, that we, for our part, may not choose to let the matter go? That we may now find it necessary to punish the injury that you have done to us? We went to great expense to resist this iniquitous attack of yours. We employed the best advice that money could procure. Do you have any idea, Mr. Bold, of the cost of securing the service of the Attorney General, Sir Abraham Haphazard?
No, no idea at all.
But say it isn't. Negligible as your own lawyer's fees were, you were indifferent to the crushing burden that others might have to endure. But you will know the cost soon enough, Mr. Bold, for it must come out of your own pocket.
Dr. Grantly, it was with the warmest, kindest feelings that I came to see you.
Oh, yes.
But I regret to find that these feelings have been outraged by your response.
Outraged? Yes, they have. For I have shown you that I will not permit my father-in-law to be ruined. And that must be a great outrage to your feelings, I'm sure. The matter will proceed, Mr. Bold, and you will be defeated, as of course you had begun to realize you would be. Word had reached you, I dare say, of Sir Abraham's latest opinion.
I know nothing of Sir Abraham's latest opinion.
Indeed?
I have it here, Mr. Bold. This is Sir Abraham's latest opinion.
And in it, Mr. Bold, he declares most explicitly that you do not have a leg to stand on, that Mr. Harding is as safe in Hiram's hospital as I am here in the rectory. This is his opinion, sir, the opinion of the first lawyer in the land.
Dr. Grant.
And you expect me, sir, to make you a low bow and to thank you for your kind offer to withdraw the case. Your case is doomed. You knew that well enough before you came here, but you shall lose it in court, sir. And you shall pay the penalty. I wish you good day, Mr. Bold.
Come on, buddy. That man is the very devil. Satan on earth. There can be no doubt about that. Oh, insult upon insult. Humiliation, defeat.
Nor is there much comfort to be derived from the thought of my success in love. For that very success has resulted in failure over the hospital.
Oh, John Bold.
Was it not very weak of you, childishly weak, to allow the tears of a pretty girl to undo all that good work of yours? Why did you let your vanquished heart vanquish your head in turn? Why yield everything? Oh, you poor fool. No less foolish, it's clear, for making a visit to Dr. Grantly and being so thoroughly checkmated by him. Well, what must I do now? I must keep my promise. I must withdraw the suit, as I said I would, and then wait to see what Dr. Grantly may throw at me in return. And I must talk to Tom Towers, as I said I would. To London, then.
I have prepared your things for you, Papa.
Thank you, my dear. Very kind.
You have not yet explained to me why you must go. What exactly you intend to do in London?
I intend to see Sir Abraham Haphazard.
Sir Abraham Haphazard?
Well, it is Sir Abraham, as you know, who has given Dr. Grantly an opinion regarding the hospital.
It is Sir Abraham on whose advice, if the proceedings should continue, a plea will be made on my behalf, or so it is intended. I wish to see Sir Abraham, ask him if indeed no better plea can be made. For you see, my dear, if the Jupiter is right, if all that can be offered in my defence is that I am a servant of the hospital, and not myself responsible for setting the particular sum of money that I receive, well, it is not enough. It amounts to nothing more than a mere quibble. And if I have no better excuse to put forth than that, then I and the hospital must part company.
Yes, Papa.
Yes?
I think you are right, Papa.
You do?
Most assuredly and emphatically.
Oh, dearest Nell, how very good it is to hear you say so. Oh, you see, Nell, I have no wish to stay in this house. I have no wish to draw my income, not if I am to be spoken ill of.
I agree, Papa.
Oh, well, then I must be right.
You won't, however, get agreement from Dr. Grantley.
I won't. That's true. But it can't be helped, I'm afraid.
Will he go with you to London?
No, Eleanor, I think not. I think I shall be off very early tomorrow, before the Archdeacon could possibly be ready.
Yes. Yes, that might be best, Papa.
I will inform Dr. Grantley of my intentions. I must. But I will do it this way. I'll write a note to him, but arrange that the note is delivered to the rectory only after I myself have set off for London. Yes, good. He's almost bound to follow me, of course, once he has received my news. But if I can steal a march on him, perhaps I can do all I need to do in London before he catches me up. I must try it anyhow. If the Archdeacon forestalls me, well, then, I'm almost assured of failure in my mission. For the Archdeacon, in my experience, has strong powers of persuasion. Were he to have the chance to interfere, I would find it hard to resist. He'd tell me I have no courage for the fight, no strength of character, no resolve. All of which I'm sure is true. Else why should I so strenuously be seeking to keep clear of him? Oh. Weak as I am, though, I think I've made the proper decision. What's that saying? Everyone knows where his own shoe pinches. Yes. Even Septimus Harding. The garden will be hard to give up.
Yes, it will. But we shall give it up and carry on. Have you thought yet where we should move to?
Well, I still have the living at Crabtree. We might go there. The house is very much smaller, though. So is the garden, of course.
Papa, it doesn't matter to me about the garden or the house or anything. So long as you can get away from all this turmoil and unhappiness. Papa?
The train is late.
No, Papa.
I think it is, truly. Oh, Eleanor, if Dr. Grantley finds me here, then we're doomed.
I am certain he is still in his bed, Papa. Well, now see, the train is coming.
Oh, so it is.
Papa?
Yes, Eleanor?
I have some news for you, which I was intending to tell you yesterday.
Yes, my dear.
Well...
Well, if you intend to tell it, you shall have to be quick.
I am engaged to be married, Papa.
Engaged? My dearest Nell. Am I right in thinking that it is Mr. John Bold to whom you are engaged?
Oh, yes, Papa, of course, Papa.
Well, you have my blessing.
Oh, thank you.
Recent circumstances may have created a small rift between him and me, but it'll mend, I'm sure. Your engagement will help there.
I hope so, Papa. You must get on board, Papa.
Yes. Eleanor, the man you have... Oh. The man you have promised to marry is an honest man.
Yes, Papa.
Right thinking in the main. And where he is not, a good wife will supply the deficiency. You're fortunate, my dear.
Yes, Papa.
But he is doubly so. Goodbye. Sweetest Nell. Thank you.
I must hope to find Mr. Tom Towers in an indulgent mood. Knowing Mr. Towers as I think I do, I dare not be too hopeful. I do begin, though, to wonder whether I might have been rather indulgent myself with regard to Eleanor and... Oh, but it was hard. And the tears streamed from her eyes, and her hair fell loose and disheveled, and she pleaded on her father's behalf with such eloquence and in such distress. It was hard not to yield. She is very lovely, and I am to marry her. But I wish I had not let myself give in over the hospital. I wish...
Here we are, sir. The temple, sir.
Have you breakfasted, Bold?
Yes, thank you. Hours ago. Are you busy?
Oh, rather. But not so much so at this precise time. This is my leisure hour of the day, if I can be said to have one.
I'm sorry to be encroaching on
no,
it.
No, no,
but I want to ask you, Towers, whether you can oblige me in a certain matter.
Mm-hmm.
It's in connection with this lawsuit that I've been engaged in.
Oh, yes.
Concerning the hospital, you know, at Barchester?
Yes, I know.
Well, I've abandoned the whole thing.
Oh.
Yes, I've given it up. Needn't trouble you with all the details, but the fact is that the conduct of Mr. Harding in this affair... Mr. Harding is
the fellow in charge of the place. The one who does nothing and takes all the money.
I never said that about him. Anyway, his conduct has been so excellent, so unselfish, that I find I cannot allow the lawsuit to be brought. And Mr. Harding suffer further anguish. Nothing should be done now, in my opinion, until such time as the wardenship of the hospital falls vacant.
Oh, yes. And when it falls vacant, the position will be filled before you know it, and the same injustice will pertain.
I suppose...
You see, Bold, we never stop hearing about the vested rights of incumbents, do we? Yet it strikes me that in a case such as this, it's the poor and needy who have the vested right, if they could only get it. While the incumbent's so-called vested right is unequivocally and demonstrably wrong.
Well...
I have to say, Bold, I'm sorry you're giving the matter up. The lawyer's fees will cost you a bit.
Yes, a few hundred, but I can't help that.
Very philosophical of you. It's refreshing to hear a man talking of his hundreds in so indifferent a fashion. Oh, have you seen this? Modern Charity, a short treatise by Dr. P. Anticant.
Anticant? Well...
Yes. I suppose it was only a matter of time before the good doctor lent his voice to the debate. What he's saying here, essentially, is that our predecessors did very much in the way of charity, but that we manage very little. And he adduces your hospital as the perfect example. Here, you can keep it.
Thank you.
Oh, and what about Mr. Sentiment's latest offer? Have you seen that?
No, I...
Well, it's a treat in store. It's called the Almshouse.
Oh, is it?
It's a direct attack on the whole system. There are going to be 20 instalments. And the first number's very good. Well, first numbers always are for Mr. Sentiment. Oh, here. You can keep this, too.
Thank you, Towers.
A very powerful man is Mr. Sentiment.
Powerful indeed.
You may be assured that now that England's finest novelist has found himself appalled by the state of the church's charitable institutions, the reading public will very soon be sharing his dismay. Instalment number one, you'll be pleased to know, contains the familiar hyperbole and excessively strong colouring. He didn't make inquiries of you, did he, for his background material?
No, he didn't.
Oh, well, the great Sentiment must have visited Barchester itself. The story concerns a clergyman. An ugly, foul-mouthed widower with a strong propensity towards evil. In charge of an almshouse, this creature is. And the old men who are unfortunate enough to be in his care are doomed to starve on sixpence farthing a day.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear, indeed. It's a sorry tale.
I do indeed remember you, Mr. Harding. The last time you visited us, there was a book of sermons you were having printed.
Oh, you're very close. Music. Church music.
Music, yes. Are you doing another book, Mr. Harding?
No, this is quite different business, which I am almost certain will require me to stay the night.
Oh, follow me. I have a room with a view of St. Paul's that can't be bettered.
Oh. Well, Bold... It's been pleasant to see you, but one must get on. Stuff to hand him at the Jupiter for a start.
Yes, of course. Towers, I have this favour,
come with me, if you don't mind, and ask it while I'm walking. You know, Bold, you'll kick yourself for dropping this lawsuit. You could have won some glory from it. And, of course, it's all gone too far anyway. The fire which you started, Bold, it's too fierce to be quenched now. The building can't be saved, and as the timbers were rotten anyway, the sooner it goes, the better, I say.
Well, that's one way of looking at it. But for my own part, I feel that I have been in the wrong.
The wrong?
And therefore I shan't be involved with the matter any more. The favour I have to ask of you, Tara...
Oh, yes. The favour.
...is that you cease your involvement with it also.
Mine?
The pieces in the Jupiter have been very strong. They're very forceful. They've hurt Mr. Harding quite deeply, but I thought if I could explain to you that he was not personally to blame for the situation at the hospital, the articles might be discontinued. Do you think they might?
My dear fellow, I really cannot answer for the Jupiter.
Perhaps not, but if you saw that the articles were unfair, unjust, you could endeavour to put a stop to them. You could do that, could you not? If you chose.
You flatter me, Bold. But you are mistaken.
Oh, come, come. You wrote those articles. I have no doubt that you did. And very well written they were. I'm asking you to desist from writing any more on the subject, or if you find that you must write more, that you abstain from any personal allusion to Mr. Harding.
My dear Bold, you are a friend of long standing, and I have a sincere regard for you. I hope, therefore, that you will not take offence when I tell you that no one connected with the press can, with propriety, allow interference.
Interference?
Even if I was in a position to ensure that certain remarks were kept out of the Jupiter.
And are you not?
Even if I had this power, it would be a very great wrong to use it. If one is employed in writing for the public press, one cannot then be at the mercy of private motives. A newspaper, a good newspaper, must be independent, and so it is with the Jupiter. The weight and authority of the Jupiter is too great, dear Bold, to be moved by personal considerations.
I see.
Well, Bold, I must hurry on. I think we have finished our business.
Yes, I think we have.
Are you coming my way?
No, Towers, I'm not. Farewell.
Does Sir Abraham know you, sir?
Oh, yes. Well, at least he knows of me. Do you think it might be possible for me to speak with him?
Sir Abraham is in court at present.
I see.
And then he is due at the house for the third reading of the convent custody bill.
Oh.
What I suggest, sir, is that you go to the house and leave a message for Sir Abraham there.
I shall do that. Thank you.
I never thought I'd see the day when the head of the bar, the legal advisor of the crown, stood up in this house and attempted to legalize indecent assault upon the bodies of religious ladies.
Excuse me, sir. Are you Mr. Harding, sir?
Yes, I am.
I have a message from Sir Abraham Haphazard.
Ah,
he says he will see you tomorrow.
Tomorrow? Oh, very well. At 10 p.m.
So late?
10.
In his chambers.
I have done what I could. I have pleaded with Tom Towers as I promised Eleanor I would. And I have failed. Indeed, I have failed, and failed utterly in this whole business. I set the thing in motion, took it far enough to ensure that Mr. Harding was made miserable for life, backed out at the very moment when some progress was imminent, and then found myself quite powerless to help poor Harding out of his plight. In truth, I could not have managed it worse. I inflicted hurt and wretchedness on an innocent friend, but stayed my reforming hand just when I might have reaped some reward for myself. Dr. Anticat, Mr. Sentiment, not forgetting the Jupiter. The cause is a very great one now, and I could have been at its forefront. I might have become a celebrated and respected figure in the capital. New vistas, lofty heights. But all hope of that is gone.
Did you pass a pleasant night, Mr. Harding?
Pleasant enough, thank you. And I shall need to spend another night here, if that is possible.
You may see out the year with us, should that be your wish.
Ah. Also, I wonder whether you have a copy of Bradshaw that I might borrow.
Certainly, Mr. Harding. One moment.
If I had the courage, I would have chosen another place to stay. It is quite likely that Dr. Grantly knows that I have visited here on previous occasions, or if not, will discover the fact before departing Barchester. But I think I would rather have him collaring me here than setting up a manhunt through the metropolis. There's no possibility, I feel, that he departed yesterday. If he did, he would for certain have found me by this time. Unless...
Oh!
Good heavens! What if he took the night mail train and arrived in the early hours? What if...
Bradshaw, where would we be without him, eh?
Thank you.
Waiting around for hours on station platforms, I imagine.
Yes. Has another clergyman come here who travelled by the night train?
No, not one.
Well, I'm going out within the hour. If a clergyman by the name of Dr. Grantley should arrive during the course of the day, and if he should ask for me, would you please inform him that I will be back here this evening? Rather late. I need not, I suppose, have left the hotel so soon. If Dr. Grantley travels today, the earliest he could reach Paddington, so says Bradshaw, is 2 o'clock. But who knows what measures the Archdeacon might take. A message could reach the hotel this morning by electric telegraph, or a letter could be delivered there by hand, each commanding me to return to Barchester immediately. And who knows but that, coward as I am, I would not feel constrained to obey.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning to you.
Are you interested in attending the service, or do you merely wish to walk around the abbey?
Well, I'm not keen to walk around. I should prefer to attend the service.
Of course, sir. Unfortunately, sir, it doesn't start for another 3/4 of an hour. But if you would like to come in anyway...
Yes, I think I would.
That'll be tuppence, then, please.
I still have the living at Crabtree Parva. In all, I suppose, there will be... £150 a year, but not much more, I fear. Oh, Septimus Harding, you are minded to give up £800 in that lovely house, and you and your daughter must manage on a mere 150. If indeed it is possible to manage on so very little. I don't think till now that I have really grasped what leaving the wardenship entails. Of course, Eleanor will sometime be married. But until then, I have no wish that she and I should be dependent on John Bold. Not least because he himself would, to some degree, have been responsible for our situation. And after she is married, well, since I shall be on my own, I must manage on my own. But £150. This is a very hard step to be set on. I only left at last.
What can I get you?
When I was driven out by hunger. I'd very much like a mutton chop and potatoes, please.
Mutton chop, potatoes.
So I went to a place I had passed the previous day in the Strand. Oh, and a sherry, please.
A sherry?
If I may.
Mutton chop, potatoes, sherry.
I must tell you, Eleanor, that I didn't particularly want the sherry, but I believe one is expected to order something in that line when dining at an inn, is one not? It was a vile drink when it came, and the cutlery was not as clean as one might have wished. And there was a young fellow who came in and who conversed with the woman who had served me.
Oh, thou cockman, eh?
On the other hand, the mutton and potatoes passed muster, and I did derive some comfort from the thought that I should not encounter Dr. Grantley at such a location. But altogether, it was not the most eligible spot to spend the evening, so I decided to decamp.
Your cigar, sir?
Oh, I won't, thank you very much. Ooh. Perhaps you'd like to keep it for yourself.
Oh, you're too kind.
On the advice of the serving woman, I went to the smoking room of a nearby cigar shop, whose atmosphere, despite the strong smell of tobacco, I found much more congenial.
Will you have a cup of coffee, sir? Or would you prefer sherbet?
Sherbet? I rather imagined that sherbet should only be taken when one is sitting cross-legged, so I opted for coffee. And after I had drunk it, and declined a game of chess with the waiter, and turned over a few pages of Blackwood's, I stretched myself out on the sofa. And very comfortable it was. Half past nine?
Yes, sir. Will you have another cup of coffee?
No, thank you. No, I must be going. Oh, Eleanor, fancy waking up from my sleep to discover that after a day or more of waiting and inactivity, I had barely half an hour till my appointment. I fear I got myself into something of a sweat, rushed out of the cigar shop, thought about getting a cab but couldn't immediately find one, walked exceedingly fast to Lincoln's Inn, and arrived 20 minutes early, finally contriving by dint of strolling up and down that pleasant place to be precisely punctual. And then, at last, I met with Sir Abraham Haphazard.
So, Mr. Warden, our trouble about this lawsuit is at an end.
I very much hope so, yes.
Oh, there's no doubt. It's all over.
Is it?
Haven't you heard? They've withdrawn the suit.
I see. I was aware of the possibility.
Yes, excellent news for you, is it not? You may trouble yourself no further now.
Well, I'm not so sure, Sir Abraham.
I'm sorry?
I wish to seek your advice.
My advice has already been given, Mr. Hart.
The truth is, I am ill-satisfied with the matter as it stands.
Oh?
Nor does your news of the withdrawal of the suit make things at all easier for me.
Oh.
You see, I cannot help but take the view that Hiram's Hospital is not at present administered in accordance with the will of its founder.
Institutions such as the hospital never are, Mr. Harding, for circumstances must needs alter with the time.
Perhaps, but I fear I cannot yet persuade myself that the hospital's altered circumstances give me the right to £800 a year. Mm. So, Sir Abraham, since I have never read John Hiram's will, and would probably fail to understand it if I did. I very much want you to answer this question. Am I, as warden of the hospital, legally entitled to the proceeds of the property?
Are you entitled to them?
Yes. Is the 800 per annum mine by law?
By law? Well, no. I can't exactly say. Not in so many words. The issue is an exceedingly complicated one, which is the reason for my being brought in to offer my opinion. But why should you be concerned with the question at all, Mr. Harding, when you now know that the lawsuit has been abandoned?
Well, I ask the question, Sir Abraham, because I may wish to resign my position.
Resign it? Give it up in time.
Yes. Did you see the articles in the Jupiter?
Oh, my dear man, you can't possibly wish to resign on the Jupiter's account. That's quite absurd. Have you consulted with Dr. Grantley on this matter?
No, I have not.
Well, would it not be best to defer any decision until you have done so?
No, no, absolutely not. This matter can't wait.
Not even a few hours?
No.
So, of course, if you have private means which are sufficient for your needs...
I have no savings, Sir Abraham.
Then how on earth do you mean to live?
Well,
Mr. Harding, you have sought my advice, and this specifically is it. The measure you are contemplating is extremely serious, and it is one for which there is not the slightest necessity, since no one now questions the justice of the case. You should run nothing, nothing, until you have talked with the Archdeacon. For in my not inconsiderable experience, a man is seldom the best judge of his own position.
A man is the best judge of what he feels. I'd sooner beg for my bread than go against what I feel is right.
I see. Well, Miss Hart, perhaps you've derived all the benefit you can from this discussion.
And another thing, Sir Abraham.
Yeah?
You say no one questions the justice of the case. That's not true. I question it, and I am the most important witness against myself. It may seem strange to you, it certainly seems so to me, that I should have spent 10 years in my happy home, and that in all that time my conscience offered no question or complaint, was only woken from its slumbers when others began to make a noise. But it is awake now, and I must obey it. I came here tonight in the expectation of asking you to abandon my defense. I know now that there is no lawsuit, and there is therefore no defense. But it is, at any rate, as well that you should be informed at first hand of my decision. From tomorrow, Sir Abraham, I shall cease to be warden of Hiram's Hospital. I thank you, sir.
Mr. Harding, you will sleep on this, won't you?
Oh, I hope to do so, Sir Abraham, for I have lain awake on it too many nights since the affair began. Goodbye.
Come in, come in. Thank you. I'm sorry it's so late.
Oh, well, Mr. Harding, you can't be blamed for the passing of the hours. Your friend, Dr. Grantly, is here.
Ah, really?
Yes, and his wife. They're waiting for you in their rooms.
Papa, I thought you were never coming back.
Forgive me, Susan, but the Attorney General would only see me at 10, and great men will have their own way.
So you've seen him, have you?
I have.
Oh, that's most unfortunate, Warden. It really is. It's not customary, you know, for clients to go directly to their counsel.
Is it not? Oh, well, I've done it now. And Sir Abraham didn't seem to find it so very strange.
Oh, Warden.
But, Papa, what did you say to Sir Abraham?
Well, I asked him if he would be good enough to explain John Hiram's will to me.
Explain it? He has already done so in the 95 pages of his opinion.
I mean explain it in a way which might assure me that I am entitled to the money I receive each year.
And he did that, I trust.
No, Archdeacon, he didn't. He couldn't. So?
Yes?
I have resigned the wardenship.
Oh, Papa.
Resigned it. Resigned it. Good. Heavens, but the whole business, the lawsuit, it's already been settled.
Yes.
Papa!
Told, do you hear? All that is required of you, Warden, is that you carry on quietly at the hospital. Carry on exactly as you've been doing. £800 a year, no work to do. Perfect.
Yes. You must be very tired, Susan. Wouldn't you like to go to bed?
No, Papa, I'm not tired.
But you're distressed. Very distressed. Warden, tell your daughter you'll change your mind. Promise her you'll not resign.
I'm sure Susan won't ask me to break my word or to do what I know to be wrong.
But, Papa, it would be madness to resign. What would you live on?
Well, God that feeds the young ravens and so forth.
Fish! If the ravens persisted in refusing the food that God gave them, they wouldn't live very long.
Think of Eleanor, Papa.
I do think of Eleanor.
For her sake. For my sake. Put off your decision till our return to Barchester. Till you've seen the bishop. Dear Papa.
But it is for your sake and Eleanor's that I have made my decision. I could not endure it, you see, if my children were ashamed of their father.
So instead you will destroy Eleanor's prospects forever. And all because some scoundrel writes an article in a newspaper. Good heavens, Warden, say you'll not resign.
But I shall resign.
You shall not. The bishop won't allow you. I'll see to that.
I shall resign.
Then you shall be ruined. Ruined! How will you pay the monstrous expenses incurred by this case?
I don't suppose they will be that heavy, Archdeacon, given that the action has been abandoned.
Oh, they will, my dear. Believe me, one doesn't keep the Attorney General up till the small hours and escape free of charge.
I shall sell my furniture.
Furniture?
Come, Archdeacon, you know you never expected Papa to pay the costs.
Well, I have done my duty in this business. Indeed, I have done more than my duty, have I not, Susan? I have left no stone unturned to make things easy for your father, to ensure for him a life of peace and security. And what thanks have I received? My advice has been systematically rejected. I have been slighted. He has gone behind my back. So, I am afraid, my dear Susan, that if he chooses to ruin himself, ruin your sister too, I cannot help it. I have nothing more to say.
In that case, Archdeacon, I wish you a very good night. Good night, Susan.
Good night, Papa.
Good
heavens.
Purchaser!
And not too soon. I feel as if I'd been away for a month. Ah.
Papa!
Eleanor!
Oh, are you well, Papa?
Well, I'm a little tired, but very well. How did you know I was on this train?
I didn't, Papa.
You've been coming down here looking out for me, sweetest Nell.
Was it all satisfactory?
Oh, yes, it was satisfactory.
Perhaps, Harding, if you've not changed your mind about leaving, have you by any chance changed your mind?
No, Bishop, I haven't.
Well, in that case, perhaps you'd like to live here.
Here?
We should be able to find a comfortable suite of rooms for you somewhere in the palace, I'm sure. You could come and be my resident chaplain.
Me, your chaplain? What use would I be?
I'm not sure I like the word use, Hardy. You'll join me in a glass of wine?
Thank you.
The point is, you'd have a roof over your head. And I'd have good company.
You're very, very kind.
Nonsense.
But I couldn't accept.
Oh. Here, wine, Harding. Why couldn't you accept?
I wish to be able to support myself. I don't intend to live on charity.
It wouldn't be charity, though. It'll be friendship.
Oh, Bishop, that's all I want from you. Friendship. Such as you and I have shared for so long. To your good health. And to friendship.
No, Miss Eleanor. There's nothing left for me now. My days of comfort are behind me.
Bunce, I'm certain that's not true. The hospital will provide you with all that you need.
No, no. The hospital can do nothing for me now. Not with your dear father going. No happiness, no comfort. It's all over for me in this world.
But you have many years ahead of you.
No, Miss. I hope I haven't at any rate, after what's happened here. All that remains is to forgive my enemies, and your father's, if I can forgive them, and then to die.
Oh, Bunce.
Well, Bunce, are the men assembled?
They are, Your Reverence. All except George Bell, of course.
Of course.
A week or two, no more, and he'll be dead. But he still won't give up thinking about money. All those hundreds of pounds he reckons the hospital owes him. The old fool. But then he's no worse than the rest. Are you ready to speak to them, Your Reverence?
My dear friends, I've much I would like to say, but this will not be a long speech. You, all of you, know by this time that I'm going to leave you. There has been an unfortunate misunderstanding between us, and now...
We never wanted you out, Mr. Harding. That's right, Abel Andy, that's right. We never thought it would come to this.
When I signed the petition, well, in fact, I didn't sign it as such. I put my mark, but...
Quiet, will you? Let his reverence speak.
My friends, I'm quite certain that you did not wish to turn me out. But I thought it best to go. Please be assured that I'm neither angry with nor offended by anyone in the hospital.
Well, you've every cause to be. These men have ruined you. They've ruined themselves, ruined me.
No, no, Bunce. Nobody has been ruined.
We didn't mean you no harm.
Of course you didn't, Handy. In this country, we're all entitled to seek our rights. And you did no more than that. My friends, very soon I will be leaving the hospital. But my lodgings will not be so very far away. So I will see you often. And some gentlemen will come to take my place.
and I'm sure you'll be as well looked after as I always hoped you were while I was with you. My best wishes to you all.
It is some time now since my father-in-law left the hospital. No one has been appointed warden, though Mr. Harding himself is often still called by that title. I gather the archdeacon had a number of suggestions for the post, but the bishop, unusually, would not be bullied into accepting his son's advice, believing, perhaps, that Mr. Harding might eventually be persuaded to withdraw his resignation. But the former warden shows no sign of doing that. He's quite contented with his lot, or at least is sparing enough of his daughter's feelings and mine to give that impression. I have come back to the hospital today. There are only 8 men now. The rest lie in the churchyard. The grounds have grown distressingly disordered and ugly, and the warden's garden, this place, which was once so neat and pretty, so well cared for, has now become a wilderness. It was here, one evening, that I came upon the warden as he played his music and told him of my purpose regarding the hospital. Oh, what a sorry affair. And how much I regret that it was ever started. Yet there are times, I confess, when I regret as much, if not more, that I abandoned it as I did. That I withdrew from the chance to make my mark, win fame. But I chose another path, a quieter, more secluded path, and I have obliged myself to stick to it. For better or for worse.
That was the second and final episode of The Warden by Anthony Trollope, dramatised for radio by Martin Wade. Harding was played by Alec McCowan, Eleanor by Juliet Aubrey, John Bold by Douglas Hodge, Dr. Grantley by Stephen Moore, and Mary Bold by Janet Moore. The Bishop of Barchester was played by Peter Howell, Mrs. Grantley by Jenny Bond, Bunce by Norman Bird, Tom Towers by David Collins, Sir Abraham Haphazard by Derek Waring, Handy by Gavin Muir, and Sculpit by Jonathan Keeble. The Warden was directed by Terry Coxon.